T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
McNeil and Parkins flashback.
The one, the only, my friend, Rex Hudler. Will you tell the Chicago audience about the time you met Bo Jackson?
Oh, man.
Bo Jackson was with the then California Angels. And I signed with the Giants. I'm in the shower after my workout, all by myself in the shower with 30 nozzles in this big shower room.
I can picture you all in the shower, soaping up and singing.
I'm washing my hair, and all of a sudden, out of the corner of my eye, I see this man walk into the shower, but he stopped. He stopped and looked, and I'm kind of in the shower, and I look again, and I took a better look, and it was Bo Jackson butt naked, just standing right there.
What we have here is a magnificent specimen of pure Alabama black snake.
And he's looking at me, and I know he was, you know, thinking, who's this guy? We just got a new guy. Who is he? He's trying to figure it out. Mm-hmm. Well, I quickly turned off my shower, intimidated by the sight.
Look at that one. Bo Jackson says hello.
So I kind of snuck around. I walked around him, couldn't make eye contact with him, and he's staring me down. He's watching me walk out of the shower. I get out of the shower, and I was so intimidated, I looked at myself in the mirror, and I had not washed the shampoo out of my hair. I was so intimidated by looking at Bo Jackson naked. I was like, oh, I couldn't take it.
Yeah, you'll have that in a locker room with 25 guys.
Yeah, exactly. Some great Bo stories I've accumulated over the years. Whenever I'd see Bo and I'd go over that first time we met, he would laugh. Yeah. He would laugh.
You ask him how you two are doing?
Yeah.
In my career in baseball, I mean, I've seen, you know, the Mickey Mantles, which all these guys. I've never seen anybody who was idolized more than Bo Jackson.
The McNeil and Parkin Show. Afternoons on the Score.
Oh, God. Wow. The man just puts a smile on my face, Stan McNeil. I love Rex Hudler. He's so great.
That's incredible.
He is my favorite person that I've ever met in the grand game of baseball. He is Mr. Positivity, and we know that a lot of people are scared, a lot of people are out of their normal routines, and a lot of people were looking for opening day to kind of put a smile on their face, and we're not going to have it. So no better way than to continue our Score Stories edition than bringing on Rex Hudler and to tell us some stories and make us feel better about life with no baseball. Hud, how you doing, my friend?
Oh, Danny, are you kidding? You guys let me tell that Bose story. I was listening, cracking up, and to hear Hawks talk about Bo as a hero like that, hey, you guys are. Getting to talk to you on opening day, which would have been right there on the south side, would have been a beautiful thing. But since it's not, we're doing the best we can do. And, Danny, I do have a baseball in my hand.
So we don't have big league pearl.
But I got me a pearl. But it's not a fresh opening day pearl, which typically when I go on the air on opening day, it's a ball from the field that has a little bit of green grass on it, got a little sense, a little smell. You know, that's the thing that I'm missing today. The sights, the sounds, the smells, good food, got people. It would have been a fun day, but it's not. So what I did was I spent a majority of my day, Danny, in my baseball room. Okay. It's in the afternoon now. I've kind of gotten over it a little bit, but I have my own little mini museum. So I went down there. I looked at a couple of Hawks. Harrelson, my Hawk alarm clock that I'm so proud to have. Some of my bobbleheads, some of my baseball bats that I've collected over the years. Some of the Kansas City memorabilia from 14 and 15 back-to-back World Series. We can't forget those days. The All-Star game in 12 that was here. You know, just being a Royals broadcaster for the last 8 years has really been a huge boost for me, not only me, but my family, who have been able to be raised in Kansas City. You know, so, fellas, I have a lot of thanks, thankfulness. I have a big heart right now, thankful for the places I've been. But the last 8 years here in Kansas City has been a blast because I'm seeing more Chicago, more you guys, and that's a beautiful thing.
Hud, do you have a favorite opening day story?
You know, as a matter of fact, I do. I was with the St. Louis Cardinals. Can't remember the year, 90, 91, or 92. Three glorious years with them. We were in, on the north side, we were in Wrigley Field. It's a day game. It's in April. It's typical. Cold. Now, how is it there today, by the way?
Cold. 40 and rainy.
Okay. Okay. It was in the 30s. The night before, or actually that day, the morning, when we get to the ballpark, Joe Torre, my skipper, it had to have been 91 or 9 or 92 then. Joe Torre comes to me and goes, Hud, you're in my starting lineup. You're leading off. Ray Langford was supposed to be there, but he's got a bad hammy. He's defaulting, and you're starting. So I started the day. The only time in the big leagues I ever started opening day. Now, I was a utility-type player, so I didn't get that honor to start opening day. And so, but I did. I was thrown in by default, and I remember being introduced, going out on the field, being the first Cardinal introduced behind the manager, Joe Torre, Ozzie Smith coming next, you know, and the rest of the lineup. It was a memory I'll never forget. I had some of my folks from Fresno, California, where I grew up, were there. So it really made it extra special. And I remember I don't think I did anything with the bat. It was really cold that day. Had a few jam shots, a couple bloopers, but I got to play some ball in Wrigley Field opening day. So that's my favorite story.
Wow. And I think former Cub closer Lee Smith was a member of one or two of those teams. And he's a guy you could tell Bo Jackson stories about, too.
Oh, Dan, let me tell you, we called Lee Big Brother. That was his name. That was his nickname. Big Brother. So I was honored to have Lee Smith as a teammate on two of my teams. Not just one, just two of them. The first time was the Cardinals, and I lockered right next to him. It was an honor, I can't tell you. And what a privilege it was just to hear him. You know, he would talk to the media after he saved a game and after he blew a save. And he was the same guy every time. He was always happy. He never got upset. If he blew a big save in a big game, he'd go, well, I think I'm going to have to go catch some crappie with my wife in Louisiana if I don't get my game back together. He was such a professional. He never, ever hung his head. There was never a doubt in Lee Smith's mind or his body that he couldn't do the job. And then out there with the California Angels, that was a beautiful stop for me, too. And Lee Smith happened to be there at the end of his career. And who was he helping? He was mentoring a young closer named Troy Percival, who went on to become a world champion with the Angels in 02. So I'm not the only guy who lucked out hanging out with Big Lee Smith. Somebody I was teammates with 8 or 9 players that were Hall of Famers. I played for 4 Hall of Fame managers. So it's not about me and my numbers as a baseball player. It's about how God put me in great places, and I had no control in baseball. You don't have to control where you go. One time I did. I was a free agent, and poor Philadelphia paid for it. Terry Francona, I tricked him all and hit over 300 the year before, and Francona hired me with the Phillies there at the last stop of my career. That's the only call I ever had. And a matter of fact, I believe Francona will be a Hall of Fame manager too.
Mm-hmm. You got paid, though, in Philly, Hud. You got paid.
No doubt.
You know, they gave me some ducats, man. I'm so thankful. but I can tell you guys, look, it's the places I got to go, the people I met, the guys I played with. That is what stirred me my entire career and post-career now. Just sharing stories about how much fun. 21 years, I never expected to play that long. 5 in the American League, 5 in the National League, a year in Japan, and 10 rough minor league seasons making no cake, no money, and getting laughed at, ridiculed when I went home being a number one pick by the Yankees. you know, 18th pick in the country. I was supposed to be Derek Jeter. And the poor Yankees were off. Now, they're a world champion organization, no doubt. In 78, they're coming off another world championship in 77. So when they drafted me, I was Simon Vetter's first bonus baby, and I was his first number one pick. He bought the team in 73. So, you know, I'm not saying it was a bad pick, but certainly when you take a guy like me over Cal Ripken Jr., that doesn't look too good for your organization. But, look, now, had they taken Cal Ripken Jr., fellas, the Yankees, they would have never had Jeter. It would have changed their history. But instead, they took a bootleg, bonehead, immature ball player like me, and the potential was there, obviously. I was a good athlete when I was out of high school. But, man, what a beautiful thing. I had no idea it was going to take me 10 years to grow up. But I finally matured, grew up, and by that time I had to accept my role, and I was a utility player and loved it. Are you kidding? It was a blast.
And part of that blast apparently included taking money off teammates for eating June bugs. What what happened on that humid night in St. Louis?
Well, Dan, I can just tell you that I was born a character, okay? That was genetically woven in, no question. Oh, and by the way, Danny, you got a new baby, man. Congratulations.
Thank you, Hud. Yeah, I'm so a dad. If I can be half the dad, a quarter of the dad that you are to Cade and your whole bunch, my kid will be very, very lucky. You are an incredible father.
Thank you, Danny. I'm so thankful that we're friends and we knew each other when you had your time in Kansas City here. But you know being born a character and then enduring baseball. Baseball, the only way you survive baseball, if you survive that long, laughter. Laughter cures all. Okay, just like winning cures all, so does laughter. You got to have it. And so the game kind of developed a little bit more of a character than I already was. Had a lot of fun. I remember when my mom encouraged me, she said, "Son, we know that you want to be an everyday player in the majors. It may not happen, but if you're a utility player, you'll play longer and you won't break your neck. You know, you won't injure yourself, probably, highly likely. And you'll be able to perform for your teammates on the bench. And what I mean is don't just sit there. Have fun. Make your guys laugh. Encourage guys." And I said, "Mom, all right, thanks. The difference between an everyday player and a bench player is about $3 or $4 million. But, yeah, I'll accept your role. I believe that." So when I sat in the dugout, man, I was active. I love serving because they have bubble gum, sunflower seeds, pumpkin seeds, all kinds of stuff in that dugout, Gatorade, and the camera people that were on both sides of the dugout. I would walk over to them in the middle of the game. "Hey, would you like service? Service, what would you like, sir? Take your pick." I just had fun. The photographers that would walk in front of the dugout during the games in between innings, I would yell most of the time, "Excuse me, you dropped something, sir. Ma'am, you dropped something." And, you know, that would stop them in their tracks. And they would look down, and I would say, it rolled down the steps over here. And they would come back into the dugout. And then finally I would say, "Just kidding." And they would look at me, and I just laughed. I said, "Look, I'm not a smart aleck. I'm just having fun." And so here I am sitting, a nice spring day in St. Louis, sitting on the top step of the dugout. And something hit me in the head, and I thought it was a peanut from the stands or something, which is, you know, that does happen sometimes. I took my hat off, and there was this big bug on the bill of my cap. And it was a colorful bug, and it was unique because, you know, coming from Fresno, California, we didn't have bugs like that like they have in the Midwest. Big red, yellow, blue, colorful. Well, I just took him and I looked at him. I had my hat in my hand, and I said, "Man, I'm going to show him to my buddies, just like any kid would do at school. Hey, guys, look." And I'm showing him to my dugout in St. Louis. We're losing to the Mets about 7-0. It's about the fourth or fifth inning. And they're going, "Wow, cool." I go, "Yeah, look at it." And then Tom Pagnozzi looked at me and said, "Eat it, Hud." And I said to myself, not so sure I'm mentally prepared to do that. So hear what I said verbally to Pagnozzi. Hey, Tom, He said to me, "Hud, we got a stipulation though. If you eat it, you got to chew him." And I said, "Hey, okay then. If I'm going to do all that, I got a stipulation. How much money you pay me? I'm not doing it for free. How much?" He said, $10. I said, "You're a big leaguer. Shake yourself. Are you kidding? $10? So, all right, $100. Now we're talking. The next guy, Lee Smith, was a part of that. $100. Luis Alicea, $100. Frank DePino, $100. Joe McGrain, $100. And so I get down close to Whitey Herzog, my manager, and we're losing 5-0. And here I look at him. He's eyeballing me, and I'm going, "Oh, shit. We're in the middle of a game. We're getting our butt kicked. We can't. I got to move back." So I went back around. Pat Downsley goes, "Okay, yeah, here's the stipulation." I said, "All right, I know that. My stipulation is I ain't eating no bug until I get the cash in my hand." So they all got up, and they went to their valuable boxes. And even back then, ball players carried C-notes. Okay, so look, 100, 200, they're slapping the cash in my hand. I put $800. I look at it in my hand. I'm going, "Oh, my gosh, look at this." I put it in my pants pocket of my baseball uniform, and I popped that. The bug never flew away. So I took him off the bill of my cap, and I put him in my mouth and just started chewing on him. And I'm kind of bracing myself for what it might taste like. And as when I got him all chewed up, I put him on my tongue, and I went, "Ah." And I showed him. I showed him to all the guys. I wish I had a video camera like they have nowadays. I would have seen the expression on my teammates' face as they about fell off the bench. And I sat back down on the bench, And I started to swallow them, thinking it was going to be nasty. And the dang thing tasted like bacon. And I couldn't believe it. I was like, "Oh, my gosh, I just made the easiest $800 I've ever made." And it was so cool. So all my teammates were just rattled. Well, we came back. We beat the Mets. My teammates call it the rally bug. They all walked out after the game. The wives were sitting down outside around the corner from the clubhouse. And they all walked by Jennifer and said, "Don't kiss your husband tonight. Don't kiss him. Don't kiss him tonight." So by the time I got out to her, she's going, "What did you do now, Hud?" And I said, "I just ate a June bug." She goes, "What?" So I ate a June bug. And then the story's gone on for years, and they still want me to tell it when we get to St. Louis, and you guys do too. But, man, what a fun time that was.
We're talking to Rex Hudler, my favorite person in baseball, Royals color analyst, an absolute character. All right, Hud, I got a real-life thing for you that we can get to in a minute. But I don't think you've told the Randy Johnson relationship and stories to the Chicago audience. From roommate to hitting almost 400 off of him in his career, and it just bothering him to no end. Can you describe to people your relationship and lack of fear for the big unit?
What a blessing, again, I told you. Getting to play with just certain guys, certain teams, and the Montreal Expos are one of them. I was at the end of my 10-year run as a minor leaguer. Didn't know it, but I just asked my agent to find me a team that would take me. I went from a number one pick from a prospect to a suspect, and now I was at the end of the rope and I had to start all over again. I was a minor league free agent. The Expos signed me. I broke camp with the Indianapolis Indians. Randy Johnson was on that Indians team, and he's looking at me two days before we're getting ready to break, and he's been with the organization for 3 or 4 years. My first spring with him. And he looks at me and asks me, "Hey, do you need a roommate? We're in a room together." So I'm thinking to myself, "Self, this guy's been here for 4 years and he don't have a buddy that he wants to room with." "All right," I said, because I didn't know anybody. "Sure, I'll be happy to." Well, obviously, they knew what he was all about. He was just a little bit rough at the time.
He was terrified.
Yeah, he was a little bit angry. He had a lot of emotions going through him at the time. He threw hard, but he couldn't throw a strike. So he hadn't become the unit yet. He was Randy Johnson. So we're roommates. Randy, so we go to the grocery store together. And we don't want to go in together. We get to the cash register. He wants me to pay for my groceries that I got, and he's going to pay for his. "Oh, okay, I thought we'd go in together and we would just put everything in the refrigerator and we could all both eat whenever we wanted to, whatever we wanted." Well, he didn't want to do it that way. So I said, "That's okay. we'll put your groceries on one side of the refrigerator, mine on the other. That's fine. And then, you know, I had guests sometimes come over, maybe when we were on the road, and they used his bathroom. It was two bedrooms. And he didn't like that. He told me, hey, keep your people out of my room, you know, out of my stuff. You know, they weren't in his stuff. Anyway, he was just real hard at that particular time to get along with. Now, we rented a car together. Sometimes he would go early. He would leave early to the ballpark, stop at the mall or something, and then forget I was at home 30 minutes from the ballpark, and he would go into the ballpark, and there I am stranded at home, got to get a taxi for 60, 70 bucks I couldn't afford. And so that happened one time, and I'm late to the ballpark. My manager goes, Hud, you can't be late here. What the heck? I told him, you know, my roommate left me hanging. So there was a few issues that we had. Now, I get called up 3 months later. I get called up to the Expos, and Randy Johnson calls me and says, you left an $80 bill for your phone, $80 phone bill. He's yelling at me. He's not real happy with me. And I said, Randy, wait, you're going to get called up too. And I believe one of these days, Randy, you're going to have more money than the entire phone company. So, look, don't worry about it. I'll get it to you. So, sure enough, he gets called up. He stays for a few days, and they trade him to the Seattle Mariners. He went out to Seattle. He became the big unit with the tutelage of Nolan Ryan and House and a few of these great coaches. He comes to the big unit. Now, all these years later, I haven't seen him since 88, 89, 90. I went to see him there before. 94, I see him in spring training. And I went up to hug him before a spring training game. I'm with the Giants, and he's with Seattle Mariners. And it was an old reunion. I hug him around his waist like I always would do, hugging me, the big guy, so tall. And he's telling me the back of his bubblegum card, what I've missed in the last 5 years. I said, hey, unit, dude, forget about that. I don't want to hear about your bubblegum card. I want you to give me some fastballs today. I'm trying to make the Giants. Give me some heaters. Throws me a fastball first time up. I lined it. I lined it to right field. Just missed it. Hit it right at him. Now I get taken out. I'm not in the game anymore. The Giants fired me. The Angels hired me. Now I'm in Randy Johnson's division. The season opens. We're up in Seattle. My first time facing him for real, I get a base hit. I hit a double. And then my third time up, I swing and foul off a pitch. And Randy Johnson comes up, walks up to the home plate umpire and the catcher, and he says, man, I'm keeping you in the game. And so I went, oh, really? Okay. So the next pitch he throws me, I tomahawk a ball off the right field wall. I almost got thrown out at second base, and Jay Buhner almost threw me out. And Randy's coming back towards second, rubbing up the baseball, going, hey, I'm keeping you in the game. What's up with that? And I said, hey, get back up on that launching pad, unit. We're not done with you. So there it started. The smack started talking to you. He started it. And then I went on and faced him four or five more other times. And there was smack. I never talked smack with anybody. Closest guy I ever wanted to say something to was Maddox. He was so cocky. I got a base hit off Maddox one time, a double. And he looked at me at second base and was staring me down like, how can the heck a player like you get a hit off of me? Pop off in the worst way, but I didn't. I kept myself. But the unit, I was not afraid of him. I ran to home plate to face him, and I could not wait. I broke up his no-hitter in the one-game playoff that we had in 95, Seattle Angels. I broke up his no-hitter, and he's running to first base, and I'm yelling, not today, unit, not today. There was just so much fun we had. And he never hit me. He never drilled me. So I had to thank him publicly for that. But guys, that was an epic battles that I had with him. He loved to compete. He wanted to beat me, and he knew I was game too. So that's what made it all fun.
Hud, you're the best. Last thing, I know that we've talked many times, and I did some of your Team Up for Down Syndrome events in Kansas City about your son, Cade, who has Up Syndrome, as you call it, and you and Mac have bonded because Mac has his son, Patrick, who is severely autistic. Mac has talked about the difficulties of being a parent to a son who is fully autistic during these times, not knowing if he fully understands what's going on. I was wondering if you could share with the audience what it's been like to be a father to Cade during these uncertain times.
Danny, thank you for asking a question like that, because look, when we had Cade, he was born, and the doctors came around and told us, hey, congratulations, you have a typical healthy child. Okay, thank you. When he came out, I knew, I felt something could be up because he didn't cry. Danny, did your baby cry when he came out?
Yes, he did.
Right. Okay, so see, mine didn't. I had my daughter Alyssa before him, a couple years before him. So I kind of knew. I was like, wow, he didn't cry. Well, I let it go. Take him home because they said we have a healthy, typical child. And when we took him home, there was a little bit of suspicion between my wife and I. We're thinking, man, you know what? I still hasn't cried. What's going on here? Well, we took him home, and then 2 days later, the hospital called us and said, you have Cade has tested positive for Down syndrome, so you have a child with Down syndrome. And I went, oh, okay. Thank you. What do I do now? You got an owner's manual? What am I supposed to do? Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, they said, we'll give you a couple of numbers and stuff to go. But there it was. That's how we found out that we had a little boy with Down syndrome. So now I call it Up syndrome now, Danny. I want to make sure that people know that. Living with Cade now, 23 years we've had him. He has Up syndrome like most others do. All have energy, unconditional love, great things for families and people around it. They build the people up. They're always full of laughter and fun. And so, but taking him like that, wasn't sure. So my family was all distraught. I'm like, hey, we prayed for a healthy child, didn't we? And most kids with disabilities have issues. They'll have problems. You know, thyroid issues are kids with Down syndrome. They have thickness of their ears and the back of their head, their forehead. There's thyroid issues, heart defects. There's a ton of those for those kids that are born. Cade had nothing like that. He was healthy all the way. So that's what we prayed for. We didn't pray for a typical child. We prayed for a healthy child. So that's why I wasn't upset. Everybody else in the family was crying. And I was like, man, I don't understand. I called my friend Tim Burke after a couple of days. Tim Burke was an Expos reliever. And him and his wife adopted kids that had special needs. And so he had some experience about that. One of his kids became mentally disabled when they had a heart procedure. So he had experience. I needed to talk to somebody who did. Hey, Berkey, it's Hud. I got him on the first call. Hey, Hud, what do you got? I said, me and Jennifer just got a new boy with Down syndrome. What do you got for me? You got any advice? He goes, yeah, Hud, grieve with your wife. Grieve with Jennifer. I said, grieve what? I'm not upset. I'm not unhappy at all. Because we prayed for a healthy child, we got one. He goes, no, Hud. Did you expect your kid to play big league baseball like you? Well, I mean, I wouldn't expect it, but I would like to have seen it. Yeah, that would have been fun. Do you expect Cade to drive a car? Yeah, I would have liked to have seen that. How about, did you want Cade to graduate with the typical kids on graduation day? Yeah. Did you want him to get married and have, yeah. You need to grieve those dreams. That's what I'm talking about, grieving. And 85% of marriages dissolve when you have a kid with a disability. So look, to save your marriage, grieve with your wife who's grieving now. Don't take the high road. That could cause trouble. Go ahead. So that's the greatest advice I got, guys. I cried with my wife for 3 or 4 days, you know, however long it took me to kind of get the grieving those dreams out. And the only thing that soothed me was when I turned on the TV late at night and I saw the beautiful sceneries, the soft music, the scripture from the Bible. And it was God saying, Hud, it's okay. Man, I gave the kid to you to enhance your life, not to bring your life down. It's okay. And so, you know, I kind of started moving forward then, as Jim Abbott was one of the guys I was training with. I went back to work after 2 weeks, and great Jim Abbott did all of those things and as a big leaguer, was on my team with the Angels, and he encouraged me, Hud, you and Jennifer are good parents. You're going to help Cade reach his full potential. You know, hang in there. Just keep loving him. What impressed me about that advice from the great Jim Abbott was not the fact that he didn't brag on himself and say, look what I did. He said he encouraged me and stayed humble. That's why Abbott's a great speaker now, a motivational speaker, encourages those that have disabilities. So once I grieved that, we went on and took Kate, and we have lifted him up. We have Team Up for Down Syndrome. We've done for 23 years to raise money just for awareness, basically, and share him with others, because parents that have kids with disabilities are just, and so they need support, and that's what we do. We try to love on parents. We try to love on all. And now that we're here in Kansas City, we support all developmental issues and all special needs. So thank you so much for being a big part of that as we continue to move forward and sharing Up Syndrome with people.
Wonder Dog, it's always great catching up with you. Virtual hug from Chicago from all of us and our listeners who've been enjoying the conversation, man.
You're a beautiful man, Hud.
You guys are, but thanks for letting me just ramble on your busy radio station. It's so good. I can't wait to come to Chicago to see you guys and to see your fans. Your teams are, oh my gosh, the White Sox are going to be tough. It's going to be a lot of fun. Thanks, guys, for having me.
Thank you.
Hud, talk to you soon. Best of the family. Thank you for the time. Stay safe. That is Rex Hudler on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Many of you making the Bill Walton comparisons. All I know is he is one of a kind, and I thought it was fake the first time I met him. I thought it was fake for the first month or two when I listened to him, and then I met him and he became a friend, and there is not a fake or phony bone in that dude's body.
It is impossible to not like Rex. You know, he was doing the Angels games in 05 when the White Sox and Angels were getting it on in the ALCS and became a regular on our show on the Sox flagship at the time, and just a wonderful guy who has a tremendous outlook on life. Always enjoyed that. Great idea.
This segment brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. We hope it made you feel a little bit better without opening day here. Bruce Weber and the 15-year anniversary of Illinois, Arizona at 4. Matt Spiegel at 5:20. March Movie Madness. Sweet 16 in the real tournament would have started today. We've got voting for the Sweet 16 next on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Field of Dreams was corny and required a massive suspension of disbelief, but it worked because in the end it was about baseball and about fathers and sons. When my wife and I went to see it, she leaned over to me near the end and said, "If you cry at the end of this, I'll divorce you. Any man who doesn't cry at Dad want to have a catch just doesn't get baseball or life." For the record, it took a while, but she did divorce me. I'm John Feinstein.
March Movie Madness with McNeil and Parkins on 670 The Score.
I don't miss the CBS Sports Minutes, but that John Feinstein one was gold. Sweet 16 voting in Dan McNeil's March Movie Madness. Why do I say it's just his? Because he was the selection committee. Him, himself,
guilty.
And him, himself only.
Yeah,
Field
guilty.
Of Dreams up 53-47 over Hoosiers. Moneyball, 70-30% over Any Given Sunday. Major League over The Sandlot by the same 70-30 margin. A virtual 50-50 dead heat. Bull Durham slightly over Happy Gilmore right now. That one is up in the air. Caddyshack destroying Rounders, 77% of the vote to just 23%. And A League of Their Own up just 51-49% over Slapshot. Rocky destroying the blind side, 86% to 14, and the natural with a slim 53-47% lead over Dodgeball, Dan McNeil.
This is the last day of voting. Get on at 670thescore.com or just where if you follow us on Twitter. It's easy to do. Vote. Get out and vote. It's our last day of Sweet 16. We move on to the Elite Eight after this. That might be the only John Feinstein sports minute that ever actually made me chuckle a little bit about his divorce that ultimately went down. That's pretty good, actually. And Field of Dreams with a lead on Hoosiers is an upset in my world. Hoosiers a deserved number one seed, which also I think can be classified as corny, as Feinstein said, of Field of Dreams, but sports movies tend to run that way. The other one that disappoints me is A League of Their Own with a slight lead over Slapshot. That just can't happen. I can't accept that. Come on, Slapshot heads. Get out there and vote. 670thescore.com.
I'm surprised, given a show with your name on it and the number of times you've done Slapshot-related content, I am a little surprised that your Slapshotters aren't out there carrying it. Maybe this is baseball nostalgia, like Moneyball beating Any Given Sunday, Field of Dreams beating Hoosiers, you know, Bull Durham beating Happy Gilmore, A League of Their Own beating Slapshot, maybe The Natural beating Dodgeball. Maybe this is just time of year is what's working in these baseball movies' favor.
No, Parkins, I think it's that anyone that loves Slapshot like Mac doesn't know what Twitter is.
That, you know, he might be on to something with that. That movie has been passed on, but not like Caddyshack for films that were just a few years apart. And yeah, The Natural leading Dodgeball, though, I mean, that would go against the theory that the younger people are voting on this. And The Natural was a bad baseball movie. I don't know of a lot of people who say good things about The Natural. I mean, obviously it was a high seed because it was ranked high in those columns. But guys I talk to about movies, they don't like The Natural. It personifies hokey.
Yeah, I'm with you. What do you think of the baseball movie theory that all five baseball movies are looking to advance? We could have, you know, there was one year where there were four of the eight teams in the ACC, and the Elite Eight were from the ACC. We could have five of eight being baseball movies.
Baseball movies are the ACC of March Movie Madness.
That's the theory.
You could be right, and some of these are just damn good movies. Major League is a damn good film. Bull Durham is a great film with a slight lead only over Happy Gilmore.
People I'm rooting for like Happy Gilmore.
Laugh. Yeah, I know you are. You know, and I get that. I actually was hoping to see Rounders make a run at Caddyshack, but Al Chervik and company are running away and hiding with that one. And again, we just retweeted the thread on Twitter, McNeil and Parkins Show. So check it out, and please vote on this. We would like to see an appropriate representation of our audience's good taste when we get to the Elite Eight voting over the weekend starting tomorrow.
That would be very helpful. So, yeah, @McNeil_Parkins on Twitter. The poll was just put out again, so anyone can go run there to vote. I feel like Rocky and Caddyshack might be just destined to – are they on the same side of the bracket? The browser with the bracket actually crashed, so I'm just looking at Shep's update. Are they on the same side of the bracket or opposite
side? I don't have it in front of me.
Would meet Rocky in the Final Four.
In the Final Four, okay. So, yeah, the same side of the bracket. I feel like that might be the de facto championship game here when it becomes Caddyshack v. Rocky.
Yeah, and that would be a damn good game. That would
be a great game.
Those would be deserving. We wouldn't have to fudge results like the FM rocker I worked at a few years ago did with their March album Madness, because they sure in the world wouldn't want to think they played Beach Boys music all the time. They wouldn't want people thinking that. My thought is, then don't put them in the damn tournament if you don't want to. I don't know why they would do something like that. That continues to just tickle me that actually happened. Stick around long enough, as I've told you before, Danny, and when you think you've seen it all, go to work one more day in this lovely world.
We're hoping to still be able to do that, keep going to work in this wacky radio business.
Yes, we are.
A texter with the theory that A League of Their Own has the Rockford Peaches, the Scores listening audience goes into Rockford, so there could be some hometown bias there for that over Slapshot.
That's a good point. You know what? I don't know if there's local bias with it. I need to see a league of their own again, to be fair. It's not a movie I can quote, and I think I probably only saw it shortly after it came out. There were there were a bunch of these in the tournament that I have not seen. I know you were a big fan of The Invincible, right? That's one of the movies that was in the tournament. It didn't do particularly well.
No, I don't have any sort of affinity to Invincible. I don't know why.
Okay. I thought you did.
I'm rooting for Rounders. I want Rounders to come back against Caddyshack. I want it, Rounders Dodgeball.
Yeah.
Would be a very beautiful final matchup for me if this was my bracket. But
there's
okay.
not enough Matt Damon in this tournament, is there? Let's face it. You know what, Danny? You have a crush on Matt Damon like no other actor, I think.
Is there ever enough Matt Damon, Mac? Can you ever have enough Matt Damon?
The guy
makes good movies.
Yeah, he does. Almost every role he's taken, I've liked. And not always likable either, which is a sign of a good actor when you can stay with him when he's playing the role of a jerk. And I'm pretty good with Damon.
Yeah, I feel like Buckner walking back into Shea.
Yeah. If I could watch any actors, if I can only watch one actor's catalog, like during quarantine or something like that, in that unrealistic hypothetical, I would choose Damon. He's probably got three of the movies that I've watched most in my top 10. Like, not, I wouldn't say Martian is one of my 10 favorite movies necessarily, but The Martian is just unbelievably rewatchable, and then Good Will Hunting and Rounders. So
yeah, well, you'd have to start with Contagion based on the timeliness.
I can't bring myself to watch it.
I'm telling you, it was freakish how I had watched that movie and 12 hours later first heard the word coronavirus. It was just the most flukish thing that ever could have happened. And things that you saw in the film, you're seeing video of all over the world right now, and it's harrowing. It always winds up back here, doesn't it? I apologize. We're trying to have some fun with movie madness, but
it's all good.
It is first and foremost on my mind. And for those of you, texting about Kingpin. Kingpin got knocked out in round two by a one seed. I don't remember which one did, but
I would have voted for Kingpin.
Yeah, you probably would have. The Legend of Bagger Vance was in the tournament and was defeated. See, some of you who are complaining about these, you got to check. And if you didn't vote for The Legend of Bagger Vance, you're to be blamed, right? When an election doesn't go the way you want it to, but you didn't vote, guess who's at fault? It's the man in the mirror.
Bagger Vance.
Go to 670thescore.com to see the full bracket and the results. I want you to reveal the comedy that you said it took you 18 years to come around on coming up before we get to Bruce Weber to tell stories of one of the great college basketball games of the 21st century on the 15th anniversary. That's at 4. We're back well before that on The Score.
Deep down, I'm feeling a little confused. I mean, suddenly you get married and you're supposed to be this entirely different guy. I don't feel different. I mean, take yesterday, for example. We were out at the Olive Garden for dinner, which was lovely. And I happened to look over at a certain point during the meal and see a waitress taking an order. And I found myself wondering what color her underpants might be. Her panties. Odds are they're probably basic white cotton underpants. But I started thinking, well, maybe they're silk panties. Maybe it's a thong. Maybe it's something really cool that I don't even know about. What, I thought we were in the trust tree in the nest. Are we not?
We are.
That's my favorite fight in the movie. That's it, yes. Old School from 03. Will Ferrell is Frank the Tank. That's in marriage counseling. In the trust tree.
God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what? It's timing. Some things just aren't well timed. In life, my marriage blew up late in 02, and I saw the movie four months later, and it hit too damn close to home because my buddies were calling the little garbage house I was in, the clubhouse or the frat house on Highway Avenue, and it was very similar to the house that they had set up. after marriages or relationships blew up in old school. So it was, I love it. I am on board. I am 100% committed to this Todd Phillips classic, and can't wait to give it another spin. It's only an hour and 28 minutes, and the athletic competition near the end is an all-timer.
It's all great.
Yeah.
So timing for me there, right? So you said 03 it comes out?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm sophomore, junior in high school and getting ready, you know, to go to college and looking forward to college parties. And they got their own frat house and Mitchapalooza. And like, I was on board with Frank the Tank when Vince Vaughn goes, Frank, we know you had a great time. The whole town knows you had a great time. Like, yes. It's just absolutely pitch perfect.
Cold night for a jog, unfortunately.
Cameo. What'd you say?
Yeah. Cold night for a jog when he jumps in the minivan. Must be cold out there.
Snoop-a-loop, bring your green hat.
Yeah.
I mean, the scene with the pony and the horse tranquilizer, every time I see it, I laugh as if it's the first time I saw it.
You crazy, man. You crazy.
We're too crazy.
I did have a question for you after watching the movie, though. Craig Kilborn, formerly of ESPN, had a small part of it. And was what has happened to Craig Kilborn? Is he doing a talk show regularly?
No, funny you ask. I just listened to a long podcast with him with Ryan Russillo. He made a bunch of money. Did the Daily Show, did SportsCenter, did other things, and then basically got out. Bought a couple of houses, managed his money well, and all he does now is weird videos on Instagram to amuse himself. And he's got this cultish Instagram following, and he just enjoys like sipping expensive scotch and reading books and hanging out.
I thought
out
he was a
California.
Member of the 12-step community. Sipping expensive scotch doesn't necessarily go well. Then again, I'm a 420 guy, and I'm a member of the same community.
I will say that his line, I mean, that's one of the more quotable movies at recent vintage, at least since the 2000s began. But his good talksy, that's a lot of years. Yeah, the good talksy out there, which we quoted earlier in the show, that's an all timer that we use, I think, on a weekly basis around here.
Yeah,
his
Craig
scene in
Kilborn.
The bathroom.
Odd guy. He gives me the creeps. He doesn't have a likable face. He's got punch me face, as anybody who was doing sports television did when he was doing it, I think.
Yeah, he plays the creep very well in that movie. But
he's good looking. He's going to be the guy who gets the girl. He's clever. He's attractive, and guys aren't going to like him. He's not a man's man.
Old school, man. I'm glad you're on board. It took me a while to get on board with Step Brothers. So I everyone has that with comedies. Like, you don't get it the first time, and it gets better as you rewatch it. So I feel you that it could happen, but I'm glad you're on board with old school, because that is a great, great comedy.
I love it.
15 years ago today, the Illini went to their first Final Four since 89 in one of the great tournament games ever, coming back from down 15 points with less than 4 minutes to play. Bruce Weber joins us to tell stories of Illinois-Arizona next on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.